Ladies and gentlemen, it's April 8th, 2013, and you're listening to episode 27 of the Nitro Beard Free to Play Podcast. That's right, my name is Brian Belita, and I have a face for radio computations. I am joined by Mark Bradshaw.
Hey, Brian Belita, this is Wolfman, Mark Bradshaw. How you doing today? Woo, yeah!
Mark, that's right, that's Mark, the Wolfman Bradshaw, joining us tonight. We're also joined by Imran Khan.
We're going to be playing music all day here at the beach. If you want to come by, and we'll give you a free t-shirt if you tell us which radio station / podcast / television station / movie you like the best, and it better be ours, we might give you a shirt.
Oh, that Imran Khan, he's so crazy. Woo!
Shirt! Yeah.
And finally, we're also joined by Matt Pierce.
Hey, we're spinning the smoothest tunes of the Horizon Festival, which I've been listening to all week.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what the radio sounds like on Forza Horizon the whole time you're playing.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, there's three stations with like stereotypical DJs who fill those different genres.
Do they have DJ Atomica?
No.
I'm gonna throw this out there. Radio is kind of an outdated concept.
Well, okay. It kind of works in games like this where, in theory, they are reporting on the event as it's happening.
Kind of.
So they kind of tell you about stuff that's happening elsewhere, although it's all really fake.
Yeah, because they had like 12 lines of dialogue to go through like all the other racers, and yeah. Like you hear it within the first like, I don't know, 10 minutes probably.
Did you? And, how far did you get in that, Mark?
I got right to the point where you challenged Darius and kind of got like bored because I found all the barn cars, and that's really all I ever wanted to do in that game.
Okay,
and if they made a second one, it was all barn cars, that would be amazing. But yeah,
what is a barn car?
They have what are called barn finds, where they just draw a giant circle on the map, and they say, somewhere in this circle, there's an abandoned car. And if you find it, you'll get it fixed up and put in your garage. So it kind of becomes like the scavenger hunt.
Sometimes they're really well hidden and they're off-road, and sometimes they're incredibly lame and like incredibly obvious, just like sitting...
You'll be going down an interstate highway, and there's this one gap in the fence with a barn in front of it. Oh, there it is.
That was... And they just happen to have like a Bugatti Veyron just sitting there. It's this thing's worth like $5 million. Oh, you're just sitting here in this barn. A Bugatti Veyron. The Bugatti. The very fast Bugatti.
The Veyron.
Veyron, yes. The EB110? Which?
Conan have a big thing about the Bugatti Veyron?
What?
The Barbarian? No.
What?
Nothing.
The talk show host, Conan? He could probably...
Yes, the talk show. I don't know. There was something... I seem to remember... That's my only experience with the Bugatti Veyron, is that...
Maybe you're thinking about Jay Leno.
Maybe Leno. I am. It's possible.
I think in the U.S. they go for 1.5 mil.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Jay Leno has a garage with 250 other cars, though.
Right, that's true.
And also a Ford Fiesta, because he's that kind of guy.
Speaking of Ford Fiestas...
Really?
They're terrible. some might say they're the worst. And you know what else might be the worst?
See, I didn't know if you're going to EA or Ouya.
You know what else gets 41 miles to the gallon?
What?
Ouya? Maybe? I don't
know. Is Ouya powered by petroleum?
See, this is why we need to have the topic settled before we do the podcast.
We had the topic settled. We just didn't know which one we were going to. And I figured that one could have gone either way.
Yeah.
You need to relax, Mark, man. We can transition. We're allowed to transition in any way.
Man can't relax. Woo, yeah. I'm on too many PCPs, yeah.
It's kind of a bad week when you hit on the topic of terrible, and it only narrows it down to a few topics.
Yeah.
Like, it could be Ouya, EA, Adam Orth.
Okay, let's get Ouya out of the way first, because this is the one I'm least familiar with. Apparently the Ouya sucks bad. So,
yeah. Are reviewing the Ouya, and it hasn't really shipped yet.
Okay.
Like, dev kits apparently shipped.
I think it shipped the final... thing for Kickstarter backers, people who paid that $100.
Right.
The reward was a dev kit. It wasn't a retail product. The same thing.
I guess I'm confused on that point.
I don't know. It can't.
I think all the Kickstarter people.
Wait,
all,
isn't the dev kit basically the final product? Because at the end of the day, it's a phone inside a Radio Shack box.
Well, it came in its final casing, so I would assume it's the retail.
Right. I mean, it says the Kickstarters are receiving their hardware, but the actual launch of the system isn't until June 4th, according to the Penny Arcade report.
What makes it a dev kit is that you're intended to load software on there, and there's not really a launch lineup for it.
Right.
There's Final Fantasy III.
Woo.
TV exclusive.
Yeah. I mean,
that's a big stretch.
No, I mean, Mark's,
that's what they're calling it.
Mark's got a point about a phone in a different case, and because given, I guess, that kind of infrastructure, the way that we guys handled, that it's just got, there are, I'm sure there are, might be good games. There are going to be some good games, I guess, but there's also a lot of shit games.
Yeah. Well, apparently it's just a shit game player is the problem.
Right.
Like, there's pretty significant input lag. And also, the way buying thing works is you put your credit card in the beginning, and it doesn't ask you for confirmation on purchases from then on.
You can just start to playing, and then it'll, okay, you're charged.
Yeah, pretty much. And, that's why they have these DLC buttons.
Yeah.
So if you accidentally hit one, you can just, let's say it's a $400 DLC charge. It just takes it.
Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, it's because I know there are, Legend of Dungeon, which is a game that I kickstarted and looks really, really nice. Well, it's got it's pixely and got some cool stuff with shaders and lighting and stuff. There are some indie games that I know that are pretty excited, to make their game Ouya compatible and get it on.
It's my understanding though, Legend of Dungeon is also a PC game.
Yes, it is coming out on the computer.
This is the thing, the fundamental disconnect I think I have with the entire concept of the Ouya. It's like, okay, they want a free open source platform that they can put any games on, and anyone can make games on, and no one can tell them who puts what on what marketplace. That thing exists, and it is in virtually everyone's house already. So yeah. I hate to be that guy who says, oh, well, why does this thing exist? But I, at the end of the day, I have to ask this question. Why does this thing exist?
Is it any box?
Right. Yeah, because it's... I mean, sure. I mean, there are some people who, yes, they have a computer in their house, but, maybe they're not familiar with, Steam or something. I guess, or even, Desura or any other digital distribution platforms.
Do you think those people are really that familiar with Kickstarter?
Well, no. But I mean, as far as the life of the Ouya goes past Kickstarter,
I kind of get the idea of an Ouya, but I think it would be more convenient if it were like a Sling box connected to your computer. Just have games play on the computer and send the video to your TV.
Right. Well, I mean, but then how do you initially get those games? You have to get them from your computer, or because there are going to be, that's okay for people like us, but Schmo, who only plays games on his phone, has a computer but only uses it for word processing.
You access the games through an online store.
Oh, here's a good question, actually. Since it's just Android, does it connect to the Play Store? Or do you have to rebuy your games?
It should. I mean, it's running Android through whatever operating system, so sure,
It's its own store, I'm pretty sure, because not everything supports... Like, you can't buy touchscreen games, because what are you going to play them with?
Yeah.
That's true.
Touchscreen on the controller, I guess, but...
Yeah. It's a touchpad, and it's kind of shitty.
I mean, I guess the takeaway is that we don't really know. I mean, I guess some of the people that have their early copies that have looked at it have said what they said. But didn't it also come out a while ago that they're basically going to be putting out a new Ouya every year, and it'll be like $99?
Yeah, well, that's how fast cell phone technology moves.
Exactly, and that I just are you just gonna stack your tiny little Ouya boxes? I mean, what do you do? It seems like a bad business model. Well, maybe a good business model, but one that's gonna piss people off.
The problem is there was so much bluster when they first announced this. Like I forget who said it. Maybe it was them, the Ouya guys themselves. But they were like, the controller reminds you of a Stradivarius violin.
Really?
What?
Or really?
There's like all that stuff. Like, oh, this is gonna be the indie revolution. Console should beware.
First of all, that's a terrible comparison to make because who buying this thing has ever held a Stradivarius?
Number one, I wouldn't want to hold a Stradivarius.
You'd be terrified, right?
Yeah. Jesus Christ, get the thing away from me. Put it back in its box.
Like holding a hemophiliac baby.
Yeah, great. This is awesome. Jesus. But it's, you know, I hate to use the word pretentious, because at the end of the day, pretentious basically means this other person is trying too hard about this thing I don't care about. But it seems pretentious, right? Well, Am I alone here in thinking it just seems like they got their head up their ass?
I don't think it's pretentious. I mean maybe the Kickstarter video, because it was kind of, you know, obviously marketing focused, they wanted, you know, people to think this thing was awesome. I think they're
purposely appealing to a kind of Gen X, Gen Y mentality of, yeah, fuck the man.
Sure, yes, I agree with that.
But so I'm just going to throw this out there. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody could get by making a console without also being a first-party developer. Like, you can't skip that step.
Right. You should support your own system.
You've got to be able to create content, right?
I mean, kind of. I mean, that's kind of what Microsoft's been trying to do for the past, I don't know, like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, but would the Xbox have been successful without Halo?
I don't know.
If Halo were on every system, to put it a different way.
Yeah. It certainly would not have made a compelling case to get an Xbox over a PlayStation 2.
Well, does Halo, as it stands right now, make a compelling case for an Xbox 360?
The Xbox 360 has a lot of exclusives made by Microsoft. I mean, they make a significant number of games every year.
I think there's three franchises, though. There's Forza, there's Gears, and there's Halo. And,
well, if we're only talking about internal development, then Gears doesn't count. But
yeah,
at this point, the brand is established, and for better or worse, Microsoft knows it's established.
Yeah. I think maybe what I'm trying to ask here is that at what is first party development important? When's the last time it's been important? Is it ever going to be important again? Does it really matter that Ouya doesn't have anything exclusive?
That's the thing. I'm trying to think of another console ever that had absolutely no first party development. And I guess the CDI? And that's all I'm really coming up with. I mean, even the 3DO had some 3DO Studios titles, even though they were garbage. But I can't think of anything else.
I wish I could say here and just reflexively say, hey, how dare you say that about this? I can't think of anything.
I don't know if anyone's really tried. But my gut says that I don't think it's going to work without first party titles.
Well, I mean, the iPhone maybe?
I guess.
That would be the only thing I could think of, because the closest they have is they made a solitaire game and they really got behind Infinity Blade. That's sort of it.
Yeah. And even then, they really only got behind Infinity Blade to show developers that Unreal Engine 3 existed.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, can you say that Ouya is a console to begin with when the operating system has already existed for a number of years? The hardware has existed for a number of years. There's nothing really keeping you from producing some just any crap and putting it on their storefront. So is it a console or what is it?
It's a device you connect to your TV and play with a controller.
Right, I was going to say, I mean, it's a console in that it's a thing that sits,
But the question is it competing with, like, the Xbox and the PS3 instead of, like, the Roku? Which seems like the more natural comparison.
I think it's competing, with things like the Roku or online. I don't know.
I think they maybe expected Apple to get into Apple TV as a gaming system by this point, because everyone expects that every year, and it never actually happens.
Yeah. Oh, that's never going to happen now. Did you see recently Apple actually kind of issued a semi-apology for making the Apple TV in the first place?
Did they?
Yeah. They're quietly ending that.
I thought they were going to relaunch it as something different, but maybe I just misinterpreted something I saw.
But not right now.
Well, every year everybody says, Apple's going to make a TV. And for years they thought that's what Apple TV was going to be. And it turns out, no, it's just this hockey puck you put onto your TV. And so,
that's tech journalism in a nutshell, is that every year they think, X product is going to have an Apple-branded thing this year. Mm-hmm. It's like, it literally never they seem happy right now with just the iPad and the iPhone.
And they saw the need to be. I mean, I might be talking out my ass here, but they don't have a culture of games there. Didn't Steve Jobs hate games?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, the thing that tells me that Apple does not care about video games is their weird policy that video games cannot possibly have a message.
Right. Well, because there was that, I don't know if we talked about this ever, but there was a game that came out that was basically managing a sweatshop make a product. And, you know, it had some sort of overtone about, you know, speaking about the products we use and play with and how they're made. Well, and the
that
effects.
One I can actually find reasonable why they cut off, because that's insulting them directly.
Right, because that's how their products are made.
Yeah, but that's not what they said. What they said is that they have a blanket policy against serious games.
Yeah.
Which is insanity.
They cut a Blood Diamond one off too, which that one's a lot less forgivable because that has nothing to do with them.
Yeah. And that we know of.
So yeah, Apple policy games, no.
Speaking of games can't be anything, Robert Ebert died.
So yes.
Yeah.
So like this just, you know, not to belittle him too much, but...
Well, we already have when I just did that. My apologies, Robert.
Yeah.
Yes, go ahead.
This led to the one time I heard anyone on, like, cable TV news, like national news, say the word gamer and not use it in an insulting way. Just totally, just one off. Oh, yeah, he had a issue. Not everyone loves Roger Ebert. He had a fight, a famous quarrel with gamers. And, like, all the people on the round table knew what he was talking about.
Wow, right. Really? That existed beyond our stupid little culture?
Well, that's the thing. I don't think it's beyond our culture. I think that our culture is a little bit wider than we imagine, or at least the intersection of Roger Ebert in our culture.
I think we're all
just big Roger Ebert fans, really.
Well, the thing about Ebert's like argument that games aren't art is not that the counter argument should not be games are art. The counter argument should be somebody actually makes the decisions in games in the same way somebody creatively decides what words go into a book or what scenes are shown in a movie.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It is a creative expression. But I think like the bigger argument against Ebert's argument isn't like games are art. It's like, who the fuck are you to define art, you asshole? That's the real argument there. He doesn't get to do that.
Well, his whole thing is like interactivity means it cannot be art.
Yeah.
Which, there's no way to convince someone otherwise of that.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way to argue with Roger Ebert, this is art, but he's going to say, there's no way now. Well, yeah, true. Well, I'll get my Ouija board and we'll see. At him.
I told you so!
I mean, games are games. If people want to think there are, people can think there are. If people don't want to think there are, people don't have to think there are. Some people don't think art is art. So,
yeah.
Like, Mark tweeted something when Roger Ebert died about how if game journalism had one critic that was even close to Roger Ebert, there'd be no question of like ethics or morality within game journalism.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we wouldn't have this insecurity complex as a gaming culture if we just had that one guy we could point to.
Like, who's our most famous analytical mind in gaming? And
Kohler, maybe? But that's only known by us.
I mean, that's not the thing. Kohler, it's among us. It might even be Egoraptor, which is the saddest fucking thing.
Yeah.
That the only analytical mind that we can really point to is Egoraptor, and I don't think he's that smart.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Adam Sessler's also pretty good.
Yes.
He doesn't editorialize nearly as much as he should.
Well, he's also
kind of really good at it.
Are you talking about like somebody who is popular at large, like beyond?
I mean, that actually makes good points.
Okay. Yeah,
Sessler, he has intentionally patterned himself after Siskel and Ebert.
Yeah, but he used to do an online video podcast called Sessler Soapbox.
Yeah,
it was really good, but he got so much hate mail for it, he just stopped.
Yeah,
and it's really too bad.
Maybe that's ultimately the reason why we don't have that voice. Because, I mean, it's not like...
Because we're a bunch of assholes? Well,
we're a bunch of assholes.
A lot of us are assholes. Yeah.
Well, it's not only that, but Roger Ebert worked for the Chicago Sun-Times. I mean, he was part of an organization that actually gave a shit about journalistic excellence.
Yeah.
You know?
And nobody's going to give that much of a shit about journalistic excellence when it comes to video games.
Yeah, even if you had somebody reporting on video games for a newspaper... It's unlikely that the people working at the newspaper would know enough about video games to know if this person knows their shit at all.
Yeah.
And when we try to get to that point where we have something resembling like legitimate journalism or legitimate standards, we wind up with stuff like Polygon, which which is just weird and creepy and kind of slimy and repulsive in its way to us.
Do you know what the opposite correlate or opposite thing of Polygon is? Forbes magazine's gaming coverage.
Yeah.
And I don't agree with everything they do, and a lot of times they really veer into unprofessionalism, but for the most part, they are the critical step we need to move forward.
A lot of it has to do with funding. Like, Forbes magazine funds their video game stuff like it funds all of its other reporting. It's just part of the budget. But Polygon, some crazy documentary for Halo 4 is what's going to fuel their coverage for the next several months, which means they've got to be really good to Halo 4.
Yeah.
You know, did you guys see that they moved SimCity's score back up?
I did.
What did they move it up to this time?
6.5. 6.5. And the description for it made it seem like they would actually move it up further after patches.
Well, yeah, they would have to because they gave it a nearly perfect score to begin with. It's like, even if you take the other crap that we found out about that game, about it having no AI, basically, they couldn't look past that because the only reason they knocked it down was because of the online stuff. So when you get rid of the online stuff and it's back up, they have to give it this perfect score again. That's the only thing.
Well, that's the thing. Now that people have played it, now that people outside of non-disclosure agreements have played it, even if everything starts working perfectly again, if they bumped it up to a 9.5, people could call bullshit on them because we've seen the game. It's been playable for quite some time.
If you think about it, all pre-release reviews are basically, the headline should be, please believe me.
Yeah. You know, the thing that this really all bleeds back into, the Polygon, this review thing, the Ebert thing, it's just fueling back into legitimacy. And I don't think there is, aside from Forbes, little isolationists like that, we have no legitimacy. We have no credibility. Because at the end of the day, what the games journalism is, it's still PR. It's unpaid PR.
So when you say we have no credibility, do you mean like to us, or I mean to outside people as well?
We, like Nitrobeard, has credibility. We just also don't have access or influence.
Okay, I will give. I'm surprised I'm saying this, but over the last couple of weeks, Kotaku has been pretty good about investigative journalism. Like, they've pulled out a decent number of stories. Jason Schreier is still kind of a huge dick.
But he's
been doing decent work.
Didn't they also put up an article about bread that looks like a vagina?
Yes. That's the weird thing about Kotaku. They have Brian Ashcraft. What's the other guy's name? The weird Japan guy. But he just goes around and he takes pictures of shit. And then he puts like, oh, this bread looks like vaginas. And then on the other side you have like, okay, we talked to a couple of people who worked on Star Wars 1313 and this is what the game was.
Yeah. Are we sure Sean Baby isn't working for Kotaku? Because he hasn't had anything to do for a long while.
Let's real quick talk about. I mean,
Sean Baby, he's great.
He is great. But
like their contribute crack now. I don't know if he taints his own space.
You know what? Before Wes, before you get on that,
you mean Brian?
Brian, I'm so sorry.
It's only been like 2 years.
I do this all the time. You know I love you. You know I can't do names.
Oh, I'm the one guy that has a baby. I must be Wes.
And I've met you in person, and I still do this. I'm sorry. Unless it was actually Wes I met in person, in which case I double apologize. But Rock Paper Shotgun has been doing amazing things the past week regarding this, and I shouldn't lay out blanket thing about them. Rock Paper Shotgun is great. There are isolated incidences. Usually, though, it's from the enthusiast press. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, what I wanted to talk about was with the sites that we go to for our gaming news, and then, I mean the first one I was going to, and maybe how that relates, and maybe how that might appear to outside. You know, outside people outside of the gaming community. I mean, Rock Paper Shotgun is great. I mean, they do a lot of great. I mean, they're all, of course, you know, just PC games, computer games. But they come off, you know, as super sarcastic and you know, and joke and stuff. Their content is good, but they're like half onion. So I don't. It's a weird balance between like really good, you know, reporting and stuff like that, and then, you know,
they had a good satire article the other day where they apologized for having female writers.
Yes. And I mean, like, if
I guess it would be kind of confusing if the Onion and the Onion AV Club just merged and you couldn't tell the difference between the two. So, yeah.
I mean, so Rock Paper Shotgun is one of the sets I go to. I guess I get actually a lot just from stuff that people I follow on Twitter link. But Rock Paper Shotgun, Evil Avatar mm-hmm. is a site that I've been going to for a long time. I don't think many people go there. I mean, their site hasn't changed in so many years, but they break a lot of stuff early, and I don't know how, but I don't think they get enough recognition maybe, but they're more of like a news aggregator. They don't really have any big kind of, investigative pieces or anything like that. But it's a good place to go to for other stuff. I mean, what about you guys? I mean, I actually have no idea what sites you guys kind of regularly visit.
Yeah, I'll just admit it. I go to Giant Bomb. I go there mainly for the quick look stuff in the podcast. Like, I don't think I ever gone there to actually like say, "Oh, the breaking news at Giant Bomb." You know, they're a bunch of funny guys and they do good videos. I don't really.
Well, the shitty thing about getting news from Giant Bomb is it's all written by Alex Navarro, and all of his headlines are like this snarky ass bullshit.
Yeah, they really. I don't know what it would take to get like Jeff to do more stuff. Probably drugs, but he basically needs to do everything. Basically, he needs to just do a book.
Well, Patrick does good stuff too.
Yeah. Well, and this is what's so cool and weird about Giant Bomb is that I think one of the reasons Giant Bomb is so popular is because people associate and just click so well with the Giant Bomb personalities. Like the Giant Bomb personalities are they're the site that has like the biggest.
They're the site with personalities. I mean, well,
they're a personality-driven site. Exactly. Like, so are we, but they're way more popular.
Right. Well, that's what I was going to say.
Have such better personality.
Well, if we all fucking live together, or had an office
and one big house
and make
Nitro House dot kickstart it
NitroHouse.com and shot funny videos. I don't know. We could do cool things. But yeah, I mean, Giant Bomb is neat in that aspect that the personalities are such a big part of the site and, other sites, not so much.
So I mostly read Joystick for my news just because, I mean, they basically recycle, PR and that's all they really do, but they're kind of transparent about it.
Also, they're quick.
Yeah. So there's nothing, there's no drama on Joystick ever. And that's kind of what I like about
it. That sounds a lot like Evil Avatar.
Yeah. So it may not, you may not get any investigative journalism out of it, but you also don't have.
Yeah. Investigative journalism.
Articles from Kotaku. And then for the rest of it, I just watch to see what's trending on Twitter.
Yeah.
I get all my news from Gaff, which is great because you get that first piece of news and that opening post, and then everything after it is just like the worst possible reactions you can ever see to anything.
Oh my god, I've seen you guys link in some things from NeoGAF. I see a lot of single post link. Just
there's I would say maybe 15-20% of GAF is like really smart, intelligent people that want to discuss video gaming because it's a hobby they love and that's something they really take a lot of interest in, and the rest of it is not even specific to GAF, it's just internet as a whole, idiots.
Right, I was going to say, that sounds just like the comment section.
Yeah, is that it's often shown as though it was representing the video gaming community. So you have a room full of complete morons with a couple of smart people in there, and everyone sees the morons post, and like, oh, that's what the community thinks.
Yeah, I don't know.
And that's why there are no women at the head of video games.
I still don't get GAF and why it's I just don't know how it became a place that, and we've had this discussion before, that like developers go and they're like, that's where I'm gonna go to NeoGAF to interact with the community
because it's the largest.
It's so weird and I don't know, it's so weird, like how why it's just, I don't know.
I mean, most developers don't go there now because people who do tend to shit off their mouths and
right
kind of get in trouble,
yeah,
and people who don't still get caught. Like the guy who was part of that Microsoft thing apparently had a GAF account.
Oh, right. Yeah, I heard about that. What?
And apparently lost his job thanks to GAF. So GAF does do some great things.
Yeah. I don't know that, like, he was an asshole, but I think the biggest problem he did wrong was that he basically tipped Microsoft's hand.
Yeah.
Like, no doubt they were going to go through with this always online thing. There was too much rumoring on the internet about it.
Well, not just like the rumor mongering. It's like no one would deny it. Like,
yeah.
You couldn't get a single developer working with Microsoft to say, no, we're not doing this. They were, they're all, it, like, by it, denial, by no denials, basically, to confirm it.
Right, and, like, I'm sure they could have handled it if, when they revealed it in the best possible light they could have. Like, maybe it wouldn't have worked, but they stood a better chance than if some guy on Twitter is like, Always Online, it's great, you guys are douchebags.
Yeah, fuck you if you don't live in a city. Screw Kansas, which is basically what he said when people ask, what about if you can't live
in
the city?
Was the greatest Twitter exchange, because at one point you're like, well, he is making a good point. You don't get online. You're always online most of the time. And then the guy's like, well, if you're out here in the middle of bumfuck nowhere, you get bad internet connection. He's like, why would I live there? It's like, how do you survive on the internet? How do you not walk into work and just offend your way out of the place every day?
So yeah, apparently the next Xbox is going to be Always Online.
Yeah.
Well.
So Microsoft
except
worst
when it's
company.
Not online and just doesn't work at all.
Yeah. The way they've said it is that like if it disconnects, you get 3 minutes of gameplay time until a network diagnostic thing pops up and you have to go do that.
Did like an actual Microsoft person say that?
No, it's a rumor from Kotaku.
Or rumor. Yeah. I mean, I've seen the things about, you know, Always Online, and I'm like, okay, that's fine. If it has features that it takes advantage of when it's online, you know, Always Online, that's fine. But if it doesn't work when it's not online, then fuck you.
You're right. I don't think anyone would mind if it was Steam in a box. Because this is what the Steam box is going to be at the end of the day, if there ever is one. It's
right.
It's going to be that. And I don't think anyone would mind if you had the benefits of Steam inside a machine that always works. Sure. But you can't trust Microsoft to do that.
Right. If you're online, you get certain benefits. If you're not, you don't. You can just play your games. Obviously,
I'm not going to say that I'm against it on principle, because I'm probably going to end up getting one because I'm an idiot. But the practicality of it is I have lost internet at times and I've played games during those outages.
Yep. Yeah, it's like if you ever like went through the experience of moving, sometimes it can take a long while to get your ISP back up again. Yeah, sometimes it can take a week.
I took my 360 and a couple of fighting games to a friend's house a while back, and I didn't going there and assuming he has a router and us like going through all that stuff to get myself signed in and entering the WPA2 key and all that. Like, that sounds like bullshit that I don't really want to do when I just want to plug in Street Fighter.
No.
Yeah, it kind of makes me wonder what's going to happen with the sci-fi club at the college where I went. They used to do these things called video game night. Yeah. They get a big conference room at the college, a whole bunch of TVs, and they all set up. Yeah. It's like a LAN party for consoles.
Right.
What happens if the internet goes out at EVO?
Oh, God.
At what?
At EVO.
Oh, man.
Or
oh, man.
PAX or...
I mean, that's happened before.
E3?
They had the stream from their phones.
E3. Oh my God.
It's just a dumb thing. Just don't, Microsoft, don't be dumb.
That would be hilarious if at E3 this year the internet went out and all of their consoles died.
Oh, I'm sure that they're not actually going to have them running off the net for those.
No.
But the reason I think they're doing this is because it will allow developers to put in any number of in-app notices. So they could be like, oh, I see you're having trouble. Press A to buy so-and-so.
Oh, God.
Because that doesn't make sense if half the audience is offline.
There's going to probably be implicit EULAs to collect unending amounts of statistics from you, too.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure they're mining marketing data, too, because the Kinect has to see you.
Oh, God.
Yep.
Yeah, so yeah, it's staring at you the entire time. It's that was strange. So it's staring at you the entire time.
That was my reaction to this.
So it's like it's the video screen from 1984. It's staring at you all the time. It's always reporting back to the home base. It's like that's not a, you know, I hate to be alarmist, but that's not a whole lot of steps away from just having some dude stare at you the entire time.
Yeah, and even if it's not like
ads.
Even if it's not used for nefarious purposes.
But it will
it's
be.
It's still not something you want. It's still not something you want to go out and pay money to have in your house.
But it will be used for nefarious purposes because these things are always used to the fullest extent. It's not like the corporate, it's like the corporation is going to sit to say, oh no, it would be dishonorable and unethical for us not to use this in a way where we make sure people have to watch our ads. They're going to do that because if they have the power to do that, they're going to fucking do it.
They've had the power to do that this generation and they haven't because they know people would freak out. So it's just a question of whether or not they think marketing reality is just gonna.
Yeah. I mean, at the end
not
of the
only
day,
that, but people could just disconnect it now and it still works.
Yeah. At the end of the day, these are rumors. We don't know for sure. Yeah, we'll see what happens at whatever the big reveal is.
We still don't know if the PlayStation 4 isn't going to do much of the same thing either.
They promised they wouldn't do it on a system level, but I mean, every third party can do it.
Require a server connection.
Yeah, I mean, we already know they're going, because Destiny's going to require one, because that's an MMO.
Right, so yeah, it's essentially an MMO. Yeah. So next year, maybe Microsoft worst company of the year?
I still maybe. Think we should get Monsanto, maybe, because they're actually like...
Yeah,
probably even Monsanto won't give a damn.
So yeah, before we jump into this, can we just say that we all agree that it's kind of bullshit that EA was voted the worst company in the entire world?
By far, because at the end of the day, EA probably hasn't killed anyone.
Yeah,
I don't care, though.
The worst video game maker in the world, they couldn't possibly be the worst company in the world.
See, those arguments are always so meh to me, because this poll doesn't matter, and the only person, Monsanto doesn't give a shit, Spirit Airlines doesn't give a shit. If we're going to annoy someone, I want to annoy EA.
Because we're going to trash EA. Yeah. But let's not make it sound like we're going to be like, oh, they're the worst in the world, because no.
Well, also, Monsanto, they're never going to address something like this. Only EA, only like a company that's like plugged into like internet culture will do something like as insane as have a top level guy like Peter Moore come out and address these things directly. It's not like Monsanto to say, okay, yeah, we know we're killing a bunch of people by tying down our foods, but we allow gay benefits. So
okay, what I don't like about the conversation that goes on around the time that these consumerist polls come out is that suddenly everybody's really active about, oh God, all these companies are terrible. It's like the rest of the year, where the fuck are you?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I don't see you railing against banks.
Yeah.
Where's your 99% bullshit going on then?
Right. But that is one of the reasons why EA is able to make a response at all. Because they're not responding to allegations that their business kills people. They're responding to allegations that their business inconveniences people.
And they kill BioWare, which is kind of also important, but that's a different
thing too.
Right. What were we going to get into after this?
See, the thing is, with consumerist, you only really vote in that if you're incensed enough to vote.
Yeah.
If you're dead, you're probably not incensed enough to vote.
Yeah. Some farmer probably isn't really incensed enough to vote. He's probably trying to keep the Monsanto DNA corn from entering his field so he won't get sued. That happens too.
But yeah, EA, worst company in the world, 2013. Still, or worst company in America.
Still the best. 1973.
See, I really, really didn't like Peter Moore's letter. Even if I didn't care about that poll at all, which I mostly don't, I think it's amusing. Yeah. But that letter was full of really shitty strawman arguments, and it bothered me on a fundamental level that he was using gay rights as a shield.
Yeah, he was using gay rights as a shield, and he didn't address the fundamental problem that EA has in that they don't make good games anymore. It's like their corporate structure has made it so things die in the development cycle.
That's the thing. I don't know if EA is aware that they don't make good games anymore.
They know they don't make good selling games anymore, which made Peter Moore's letter also kind of weird, because he was like, we're crazy successful. No one can, the tallest trees get the most wind, or whatever the fuck he was saying. But it's like, how do you say that weeks after your CEO just resigned in disgrace?
And also, Activision is actually the tallest tree here. And you don't see people doing this to Activision. So just throwing that out there.
So my favorite line is, and I quote, every day, millions of people across globe. Oh, man, it is just across globe. It's not the globe. Sorry.
Well, Peter Moore's British, so you have to say it like
every day, millions of people across globe play and love our games. Literally, hundreds of millions more than will vote in this contest. And I don't know. Oh, no.
Even the child Peter hates Moore this.
Exactly. Thanks, Peter Moore. You make my baby cry. So, and you know, and I'm like, well, those people, they are okay. They're, oh man, all right. I may have to investigate. They're on my voice with them. You know, those people are, I don't want to call them idiots, but they are not the people who care. They're not the people who, I don't know. You know, like Joe Dog, who, you know, plays EA Sports Madden.
Yeah.
He doesn't
get it. He gets Madden every year.
Well, and well, actually, apparently, because he doesn't know.
Yeah. According to the consumer, is that one of the biggest reasons people were like, they wrote in is because of the declining quality of Madden over the years.
Yeah, and let's not forget the reason why that's a big issue is that these guys are playing Madden not because they necessarily love Madden. They're playing Madden because they love football. And EA has an exclusivity agreement with the NFL.
Yeah, these guys probably actually remember the 2K Sports NFL games.
Or even if they didn't, they might appreciate another choice this year. Maybe when they see Madden going downhill, they'd appreciate it if there was a 2K NFL game.
Yeah. I mean, it's like saying, you know, I don't know, fucking ice cream company X puts out a thing saying, you know, every day millions of people across the globe are eating and enjoying our ice cream. Literally hundreds of millions more of them will vote in this contest. But like there, you know, there's
still in the ice cream.
There's what?
There's still teeth in the ice cream.
Right, exactly. But there's still teeth in the ice cream. And there are some people who are like, I don't fucking want teeth in my ice cream.
I mean, let's call this out for what it is. This is Peter Moore trying to stake his claim as CEO.
Yeah. In an incredibly clumsy way, yeah.
I think also this was meant to be a morale booster, but it should not have been released externally. Like, this would have been a fine internal memo. To say that, yes, we have problems, but we're going to do better, right, team? And internally, that would have been just fine.
That's weird. I mean, like, the weird thing about it is, like, the title is We Can Do Better, but at no point is he actually saying, okay, we hear you, we understand the problems, we'll do better. But it's more like this defensive screed. Like, fuck you guys, we know we're awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's just because he realized, at the very least, that there are legitimate complaints in that poll. They're not all...
But he didn't really acknowledge them. He just kind of straw-manned people. I want to bring up again how annoyed I am about the gay rights thing.
Yep.
As if, like, EA did not just make a gay planet in Star Wars.
Where is that line? I'm trying to find the quote in his letter.
It's something about, like, how...
In the past year, we've received thousands of emails and postcards protesting against EA for allowing players to create LGBT characters in our games. This week, we're seeing posts on conservative websites urging people to protest our LGBT policy by voting EA the worst company in America. That last one is particularly telling. If that's what makes us the worst company, bring it on, because we're not caving on that.
It's, that's like, you know, okay, you know, hey, at least we're not homophobes, too, is basically what that is.
I would be with him if they really were making a visible, active attempt to include more LGBT characters somewhere in their games, but they're really not.
What they're doing is they're having basic toggles, I guess.
You're sometimes. A male or you're a female.
They're not being more inclusive. They're being slightly less exclusive.
Well, here's my question. Like, had they made any efforts outside of the BioWare stuff? Or is entirely BioWare doing this?
I can't think of any.
Yeah, can anyone think of being able to choose as, like, a transgender person in, like, Battlefield? Probably not.
They actually even explicitly said they're not putting women in Battlefield. For some reason. Like, I don't even know why that, like...
I think that's probably due to, like, the Marines and, like, the U.S. Armed Services saying that they're allowing, like, women to serve frontline troops.
No, that's what I'm saying. They're saying they're not going to do it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's probably why they're saying they're not going to do it. Because people are going to ask them.
It just seems like, you know, it would be dead simple to put women into Battlefield. Yeah. Like, Activision has showed off their next-gen engine, and the very first thing they did was show a woman soldier. And I'm pretty sure that was intentional. It just seems strange that, like, oh, we're so fucking inclusive. You guys have no idea. Women? No. Fuck that.
What was the last EA games that you guys bought?
I think that's... Yeah, Mass Effect 3, but I hated Mass Effect 3. Like, you take further go back and, like, say the last EA game I bought and, like, unquestionably enjoyed. I know that game. That's Dead Space 2.
Oh, I own Need for Speed Most Wanted, apparently, so that.
I'm trying to think of the last EA game I bought that wasn't a Mass Effect. It was probably a Need for Speed game on sale on Steam.
Oh, that's another thing that they brought up. He said, there's no point for Origin to exist. He said, we got 45 million people on Origin. Well, you know you're fudging those numbers, but okay. But it still doesn't mean that Origin should exist.
He does have a point, though, that whether or not you believe it should exist doesn't mean they shouldn't try.
Yeah,
but
it's
also
a lucrative market.
It brings up the question of who is writing in complaining about Origin?
Some of the people on the poll were. I mean, it's not a large number, I'm sure.
I mean, but you're going to have crazies calling about anything.
Well, that's just the point again. Like, he's addressing the people who are complaining about Origin. He's addressing the people who are complaining about the gay rights and anything else. But he's not talking about the people who complain about the quality of their games or the years. He's not talking about the people who feel like they ruined Dead Space because it feels like they shoved in co-op out of nowhere.
I don't think that's the complaint
that he needs to address. I think he needs to address the complaint that as a company, they engage in anti-consumer behavior. Yeah. Like, fuck quality of games, fuck gay rights, or whatever else. Like, he's choosing to reply to the craziest complaints, which I guess that's a defense thing, but whatever.
Well, yeah,
Two years in a row, people have said that EA is anti-consumer. And their response to that is, well, you just hate gay people.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, now they can, you know, if someone approaches them and say, hey, why did you guys keep showing up in this poll? They can just point to Peter Merle's memo. So,
I actually have a bunch of games I didn't even know were EA games. Burnout Paradise.
Yeah.
Didn't know. Mirror's Edge. Didn't know.
Oh, yeah. Mirror's Edge is kind of obvious because it was focus tested and died.
Oh.
And focus. Yeah. That game shouldn't have guns.
Mirror's Edge 2, believe.
That game should have had an end.
Well, supposedly there were more guns before they took the count lower.
Yeah, well, they shouldn't have spent the entire game telling you about how horrible the mayor of the town is and then never get to show him ever once on screen. That's kind of an issue.
All right, let's take a break.
All right, break.
Break. Welcome back to Night to Be a Free to Play 27. I'm your host, Brian Belita.
You're fired. Radio silence.
Oh no, he's having a stroke.
You know who else had a stroke? Margaret Thatcher. All right, back to
All
right, so
we'll apologize about raising our glasses of milk and remembrance.
Throw them at the pores.
I'm gonna pass it over to Matt the Man Pierce to announce next week's Illiterous Book Club video game of the week.
So, okay, the next week's Illiterous Book Club game is kind of a little indulgence because when I was a kid, I always wanted a Saturn and couldn't afford one.
Mm-hmm.
So, since it just came out on Steam a little while ago, I figure we'll play Nights into Dreams.
I have never played that before.
Neither had I.
I played it. It's going to be an experience, let me tell you.
Well, I played it a little this weekend. Yes, it's an experience.
I was laughing today because Mark sent an email like, I didn't get a chance to play Nights over the weekend. And I was like, you maybe need half an hour.
Yeah, but I had important game. And I couldn't fit into my schedule.
Mark cut out the show. All I heard was, yeah, well, I had important game.
Yeah, I was hoping he would like pausing for impact. Like, I had an important game.
Well, that's cool. So we'll be talking about Nights. I think we may try to get Ryan Bloom on the podcast because he's like the master of Nights.
He is the Night Master?
He's the Night Master.
Wasn't that a serial killer in like Boston? Or is that... No,
I'm pretty sure it was a supervillain in a DC comic, but close.
Nightmaster?
I don't know.
What are we talking about?
By the way, everyone should kickstart Shovel Knight because it looks awesome.
People talk about the game. What's up with it?
It's a game that's made by X Way Forward dudes.
And there's a knight with a shovel?
Yeah, it looks like DuckTales.
That's cool. Woohoo!
Like, they've gone way over their goal. They got, like, a Mega Man composer for a couple of songs.
Oh, that's pretty rad.
Yeah.
That's neat. Cool. Well, maybe go do that. Maybe look it up.
Yeah.
The surprising thing with the Shovel Knight Kickstarter, and not to for the podcast go back into Kickstarter cast again.
Kickcast.
But apparently it costs $75,000 to make a NES game.
Is it a NES game?
It's basically a NES game. I mean, it's
now when you say basically, it's because like it looks like lo-fi and old school. Because, I mean, are they actually making like a NES ROM?
No,
DuckTales.
No, Shovel Knight. They're also making DuckTales, so that's different. That's going to be Kickstarter because it's by an actual company.
Dishwasher and, Samurai.
Yes.
I mean, like paying for all those people, like their salaries, paying for the fees to get it on systems.
Yeah, that doesn't sound unreasonable for an NES game. During the NES era, either. Owing to inflation, that doesn't sound like too much money.
I thought you were talking about a video game first. Owing to the return.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
we're gonna play that on the computer or whatever system we happen to have it on.
I'm gonna see if I can get my computer down to 320 by 240.
I should also play the Wii version of Knights alongside this because it's terrible.
Oh, you shouldn't.
Is it, God. How was it? Oh, wait. Was that like a new
It's a different release? Game entirely.
It's a sequel. Game.
Okay.
But it's still called Knights in the Dreams, right?
It's something else. I forget.
Hold on. Let me go look at my...
Okay. There was Wii a PS... Yeah. There was also a PS2 Knights game.
It was a quote-unquote remake of Knights Saturn. Like, just cleaned up textures and stuff, I believe.
Okay. Huh. So basically what we're going to get...
Journey of Dreams.
Yeah.
Journey of Dreams. Okay, well, that's cool. So, what have y'all been playing? I've been playing things.
What have you been playing?
What have I been... Oh, boy. Let me tell you. So I've been playing more Darksiders 2 and enjoying that.
How far are you to Darksiders 2?
So I'm in the... I guess, like, the other realm...
The World of the Dead?
World of the Dead now.
What did you think of that boss fight at the end of the first planet, or first dimension?
Oh, that was hella Shadow of the... Well, not really hella Shadow of the Colossus, but that was pretty cool. Yeah. It was neat.
That's where the game peaks.
Oh, no.
Like, it's great.
Now you've
like,
created unrealistic boss... expectations of me.
That boss fight is amazing. Well, and if nothing else, maybe it'll beat the expectations.
Okay.
But like, okay, then the underworld is actually, it's like a lot like the last one, but doesn't have that cool music. Then after that, like, it just falls off a cliff.
Hmm. Okay. We'll see. So, I'll be the judge of that.
Did you finish Duke Nukem?
you know, I didn't. Wait, didn't I?
You don't even know.
Hold on.
Ladies and gentlemen, Duke Nukem 2011.
No, I don't think I did. I think I was like, at a point I was like, all right, this is just some bullshit. and I just looked up the ending and I watched it on YouTube. I'm pretty sure that's what I did. But yeah, so I've been playing Darksiders 2. I've been playing Desperate Gods.
What's that?
It's a online board game. So for a while now, I've been wondering what like the best, because I love board games. I love board games, but it's, you know, I don't get together with friends as often as maybe I would like. So I've always been curious about kind of the best implementation of an online board game. And Wolfire Games is a you know little indie studio that has made a game called Luguru, which is about a kung fu rabbit that you play. And it does some really neat stuff with the fighting system and animations and stuff. And they're working on a sequel to that of sorts called Overgrowth, which is looking really, really neat. And I just bought into kind of the game / getting the alpha builds. And it's looking really good. And along with that, I found out that they put out this free game for this, you know, this little 7-day jam called Fuck This Jam, where you're supposed to kind of develop a game that maybe you don't often make. That you're not familiar with. And so they made a board game called Desperate Gods. I mean, mechanically said, the game itself is, you know, it's a board game. You have pieces that move around on a board. You flip cards, you roll some dice. But the thing that interested me the most about this is the kind of the actual, I guess, the engine or the mechanics of how the game works, because it's set up, the game will not enforce the rules. It's a literal virtual tabletop. So it's got, like, you know, you can pick up a card, you flip it, you can put it up, you can shake to shuffle a desk, or a deck, you can, you know, use your mouse to pick up a couple of die, and you shake your dice, your mouse back and forth to roll the dice a bit and let go, and you can roll them. So it's
like how my friends play Monopoly. Just fuck the rules. If you weren't paying attention, that's for you.
You can do that. But the engine itself has some neat physics. It's the best implementation of a virtual tabletop to date that I've seen. And I loaded up and played some with Kalen Proctor, I'm sure you're from the platforms, and Cambot. I don't know Cambot's real name, I'm sorry to say.
It's actually Cambot.
Cambot?
Cameron Bot.
So it was
Mike something. Yeah, I don't remember Mike, his last name.
But, stop breaking the illusion.
It's internet's Mike. But so I've been playing that, and that's fun, and I kind of maybe want to get us together in a game and kind of record that, you know, us playing slash just doing some banter back and forth, because board games are fun, and I would really, they released the source code for free, like on GitHub or something, and I wish I knew anything about coding, because I would take that and try to use that to kind of play test the board game I'm trying to design or make. That's pretty much it. Oh, Dungeon Dashers. I've been playing Dungeon Dashers, which is a game that is on Steam Greenlight right now. I think I've mentioned it before. It feels really good. It's crisp. It's kind of a top-down, again, almost emulating a board game. In the end, once the game's actually completed, it'll have online co-op and I think asynchronous play, you know, so there's like a thief, a warrior, a mage, an archer, and you kind of have a certain amount of action points and you go around and you take turns, and it feels really good. But I'm done now. There are dogs barking, so I'm going to mute my mic and let somebody else talk.
Dog, dog, dog.
Talk, 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 talk. Hey guys, you know what's really difficult?
What?
1999 mode in Bioshock Infinite.
Okay.
What the Holy... fuck is 99 mode?
1999 mode, it's a difficulty level basically set. Usually it's unlocked after you beat the game. You can also plug in the Konami code, and that will unlock the game. But basically, everything takes a lot more bullets to kill, and you don't have a lot more life. And here's the thing is, like, when you die in regular Bioshock, you, like, lose a little bit of money. It's not a huge deal, like Elizabeth, like eventually brings you back. By the way, Elizabeth brings you back to life in Bioshock. If I hope that wasn't a spoiler for you, Brian.
So she's a mobile Vita chamber?
For all intents and purposes, yeah. But anyway, in 1999 mode, you lose like 100 gold. That's a lot of money, and if you don't have enough money, the game ends.
$100, Ron Paul.
Yeah, $100 Ron Paul dollars. Yeah.
Wait, so Bioshock Infinite has a Borderlands like Jesus Christ dogs. Has a Borderlands like
it has Jesus system? Christ the dog.
Yes.
It's great. It's the best boss fight ever.
It has a Borderlands like respawn system, and that you have to pay to live.
Well, you don't pay to live, but it's like money gets taken out of your bank account automatically. Now, like in regular mode, you just like have $0. It's not a huge deal, but it's also, you get so much money and like so little money gets taken out that you're never in danger of that anyway. In Bioshock Infinite, you lose a ton of money, and that, but 99M or whatever, you lose a ton of money, and when you need that money to buy the upgrades because it's so much more difficult, you badly need those upgrades. So usually you're running around with not a lot of money in your bank account, and if you die, you are shoved back into the last checkpoint, which in Bioshock Infinite can be quite a ways back because it has the worst checkpointing system in the world. It's weird because it's kind of like two different games. If you try to play this on 1999 mode, it's like in normal mode, it's kind of doing that thing where it's holding your hand, and if you just like wait it out, you'll eventually see the whole game, which isn't awful because that's the entire point of Bioshock Infinite. You want to sit there and play the whole thing to show what Ken Levine wants to tell you. But in 1999 mode, it becomes an actual video game, and that's when things kind of fall apart because it's so wide open there in the arenas. You don't know where you're getting hit usually.
Yeah, that's my favorite part of Bioshock Infinite. The where's the guy who's yelling at me and shooting at me?
It's like playing Battlefield online.
Yes, except they don't really do any damage, so you're just getting annoyed because you can't find this one dude.
Oh, can I real quick before we move on to whatever next that I can mention how much I kind of don't like having to unlock harder difficulties.
You can Konami code this open.
Okay, that's good.
The frustrating thing about this, like, I don't mind unlocking harder difficulties if, like, it's a new game plus. And, like, a bunch of, like, the abilities you get in Bioshock Infinite, you get in, like, the last third of the game. So you don't get to play around with them very much. So it would be so much better if there was, like, a true new game plus mode where you play around with stuff. But there's not.
Okay. I don't know. I'm of the belief that, like, I enjoyed the gameplay in Bioshock, but I didn't think it was necessarily great.
It was good. It was good, not amazing. Yeah.
It was, I would put it not as bad as Spec Ops: The Line, but I would put it in the same bucket.
Ooh. Yeah. Interesting.
So, I mean, going through normal is fine. Yeah. Just whatever it takes for you to get from point A to point B, that's the way you should play the game.
Yeah.
Okay. And it should be noted that when we say this, it's not a knock on Bioshock Infinite at all. Like, the total package, like, if you move the gameplay and just put it aside and say, well, it's not great. It's a step above Bioshock 1 and Bioshock 2, but Ken Levine really needs to stop making first-person shooters. But if you take as one thing, it's like, you really need to play that video game.
All right, we've had enough Bioshock.
Never have enough Bioshock. It's going to be Bioshock cast by the time I'm done with it.
What are you planning to play, Brian?
Bioshock.
Soon. I think once I beat Darksiders, I'm going to try to pick it up.
Play Bioshock Infinite.
I will. Bioshock Infinite eventually.
Get with the program.
More like Bioshock eventually.
Yeah. Eventually, yeah.
Oh, snap.
What about you, Imran?
I really haven't been playing a whole lot. I bought my brother a 3DS XL. Because he bought another one because he has too much money. And so I've been trying to find a cradle for that, and it's apparently the hardest thing in the world to find. Because it's only sold for Nintendo, and it's like a small tray of plastic that's $20.
You mean the cradle you get with the system, right?
No, the 3DS XL does not come with its own cradle.
I see.
And I don't want to be like a chump plugging my shit in. It's 2013. I should just be able to drop it in things.
Surely there's... Just have a point. Make one out of Legos or look it up on, like, you know.
Print DIY. One. Get a 3D printer and make your own, man. It's open source trades.
Yeah. That should bring you to 3D printer.
Just kickstart one.
.com.
Kickstart printer. Kick printer.
That's what I've been spending most of my time on, is that I've been trying to work out how much money. Like, I have decided that at some point I'm doing a race in games Kickstarter. And I've been spending the last week and a half trying to figure out how much money that we'll actually need.
Let's figure it out. Let me know how I can help.
Like, I got someone that's going to... She listened to this, so she's going to be happy that she's being mentioned, but she's going to do the art for the Kickstarter. So I've at least gone through that part. And then it's the video, and then all the other videos, and I'm probably going to bring on a Matul Remritz, Kevin Snow, to help with all this stuff. So we'll see. That's what's taken up all my game time. Also, I've been playing Luigi's Mansion, so not all my game time.
Did you
game is not racist.
did you actually buy a copy of that, or did you go through the Nintendo store online thing?
No, I bought a copy with a couple of weeks ago. Target had a buy two get one sale.
Okay.
So I was buying games for other people,
did,
and I was like,
I need to find more time to use my DS, my 3DS. Yeah.
Yeah. Luigi's Mansion's really, really, like, if you're looking for a good, nice, chill puzzle game, it's the most charming puzzle game I've ever seen.
I could go for that. Cool. And Matt?
So I'm going to rant a little bit about Forza Horizon, because I was planning to write an article about gender and the characters in that game. And it's probably going to turn into an article just about the characters in game in general. But there's all these other pet peeves that keep sneaking their way into the article. I just want to get them all off my chest. So, okay. For anyone who doesn't know, game is an open world game where you drive around to all the different events and race in those events, right?
Right. It's Test Drive Unlimited or Burnout Paradise.
Yeah, like either of those games. Big problem. After, well, tiny problem that annoys the hell out of me. After any event, it pops you back on the world map in the middle of the road, parked diagonally, with cars usually coming straight at you. It's kind of annoying. And it seems like a really simple problem they could have fixed like immediately, and they just didn't.
We'll just put you on like the side of the road, because there's plenty of places on the side of the road, like anywhere in that game.
Yeah, like in the shoulder.
Yeah.
Or next to each of these events, put like a little parking lot. Anything. Anything after 5 minutes of testing would have figured out.
And then, this has nothing to do with like what you're talking about. And sorry for interrupting, but the other day, like the tire blew out on my car, and I was on the interstate, and so I got off on the shoulder of the HOV lane, like the party drive lane, and that's a really harrowing and scary experience, with like every giant bus driving right beside your car.
Oh, yeah, and yeah, I remember. I saw your tweets about that
in the divider.
Yeah, pretty much. Like right next to it, and if we're just slightly less wide, I probably would be dead.
I remember having the same issue. Like my car would always break down, and like I remember the transmission dying on it one day, and I had to walk like a mile and a half to get to the nearest phone, which is at a Hardee's, and this is like in the middle of the country in North Carolina, and you had to walk beside like this freeway to get there, and not a lot of like room there, because like on one side is like the freeway and the other is like a gully, and you don't want to walk past the gully because you're in somebody's yard and they legally shoot you. So you're
the south.
Yeah, so like just this
very Mark, they won't shoot you, you're white.
They could probably sense I was Democrat though. So they and even not, they'd still be able to shoot me. And it's like, you know, if you can shoot somebody in the lawn, you might as well. Anyway, you have this very narrow strip of land, and I have weak ankles. And pretty sure if I died a few times in like alternate universes just on that walk. So yeah.
Sorry for interrupting you about the Florida stuff.
Well, the other thing that ties to is that you can fast travel around the map eventually after unlocking it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a pain in the ass that you have to unlock that. But once you've unlocked fast travel, it makes it so that you can actually get to events within one play session. Except that when you fast travel, it brings you to the outpost, parked, so that the exit is to your left or to your right. But either way, you're going to have to make a K-turn to get out of the outpost.
Or you just drive through the fence. You can do that, too.
Yeah, it's like, whenever you fast travel, why don't they just point you at the exit? Like, there's all those minor things, but then there's the really big major problems.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that the tracks aren't really tracks, they're constructed out of these roads in the overworld.
Right,
like Burnout Paradise.
Yeah, except that the roads don't always come together very well at the intersections. So, every once in a while, you'll be going 150 miles an hour down the road and hit an invisible bump and fly a block.
Yeah.
Yeah, that happens to me in Sleeping Dogs a lot.
Yeah, that's an issue. Big issue in a racing game.
Yeah, that's the thing I don't like about this open world like phenomenon we're seeing right now. I would much rather have like an actual racetrack that was designed to be a racetrack and not like a road that has to have... It has to be a road that people conceivably would drive on. It's not like you're going to see the corkscrew at Laguna Seca usually inside like a normal road because it would kill people.
And that's that's another big, big issue with Forza Horizon. These roads are really roads. I mean, there's one lane in each direction. There's almost no space to pass in an actual race. There's no proper entrance or exit for a corner. It's you basically, as long as you keep control of your car throughout the entire race, you win.
Oh, racing games. Racing in video games. Kickstarter.com.
Race games.
Yeah.
Racing games.
Oh, man.
So the
why
other
is Koopa
issue,
always going to be slow?
The other issue, I'm going to just throw it out there. The ending of the game, there is no ending to the game.
Right.
You beat the guy, you win the championship, and the final race is a giant pain in the ass. It's the lap around Colorado.
Oh, God.
Like, the entirety of Colorado.
It's a quick time event.
Five hours later.
The problem is that the car they recommend you take into the event, which, by the way, you're going to go with whatever they
tell you to take because you're not allowed to enter the shop once you hit the end game.
Oh wow, really? So the whole thing about four.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Pro tip, Mark. Before you get to the final part,
yeah,
pick which R1 level car you want to finish the game in.
Okay.
Because you won't get to pick at the end.
So don't just futz around in like the Lotus like I like to drive around in, because I figure it's Forza, I should be able to drive the car I like, because it's the whole freaking point. Okay, well, great.
You're going to need an R1 car for the end of the game. So pick and buy the one you want before you get to the end of the game, or else you'll be given like 3 to choose from.
Oh, okay. So if you don't have an R1, it'll give you an R1 car. But
no. If you don't have an R1, it'll force you to buy a $1.5 million one.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, that sucks. And if you don't have the money, you can always buy great car tokens in DLC. Yeah, it's kind of shitty. But once you get to that point, you can't enter any other events. You can't participate in any other parts of the game until you finish that last part. So you could literally get your save file stuck there until you buy DLC car tokens.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Hooray for our always online future.
Yeah. But then when you beat the game, they don't even show you credits. It just dumps you back to the world map.
Now I kind of just want to end the podcast by just putting music here.
Just cut it off.
Yeah.
Yes. Good deal.
All right, let's do that, actually.
Yep.
That's the end of the podcast.
All right, we're done. Bye.
Bye. I gotta go.